Oh, thank God. I was getting so scared for a second.
I wish everybody could see Alice. She turned into kind of like a we were like witches around the fire, and her body language was like, these women, that they're mean. And those
the mean girls.
Yeah, so stay away from those women and hang out with us.
Hey, Warners, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes business sexy again. I'm Rachel Pitts, mom, realtor with BRG in Myrtle Beach, and creator of The Closing Curve.
And I'm Gina Tremarco, founder and sales trainer at Pivot 10 Results and Carolina Improv. How's it going, Rachel?
Fabulous. It's summertime up in here.
So it is summertime in here.
In Myrtle Beach.
I'm having my own personal summertime.
Too hot. Oh. Hot, yeah.
Yeah.
Would you like to expound upon that elusive, vague statement?
I'm a woman of a certain age experiencing certain things.
Yeah. Well, you and you were talking about that, and I'm thinking, you know what? There's a huge market for women of a certain age going through certain uncomfortable things. So there's like a whole market there that's waiting for help.
Oh, there! It's a huge market. You're a couple years behind me, but
I have time to think about ways to help you guys.
Let's just put it this way, Warners. I just need a fan next to me.
We should get you know what I've always
and
wanted?
Not like it's fans. Like
you know what I've always wanted? Like a palm frond bearer, like that fans me with a hot, muscular young guy that doesn't talk at all ever. And just fans me with a palm frond.
Yes.
Do you want one of those?
I want one of those.
Now I'm hiring.
I probably will need more than him.
Okay, one on each side.
I think I need more than being fanned.
Oh.
But that's a whole nother.
Well, for now, for PR, HR reasons,
so I need
we need one
palm,
one mute palm frond bearer.
Palm frond bearer. We are now hiring palm frond bearers.
This is a serious request.
Okay. Anyway.
Okay.
What were we talking about?
Doesn't matter at all.
We have a show to do.
So who we have on the show?
We happen to be together today in person,
yeah,
which is exciting.
Which is why we can get crazy. Like
who do we have on the show today? Wait a second. Just a reminder. We do this reminder all the time, but we're going to do it again. We love reviews and ratings, so go to iTunes, give us a review and a rating, and you can easily access that at our iTunes page and from our website, womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com. That's my little public service announcement. But today, our show guest, so adorable. She's so funny, Alice Hyman. And I do have to say, she gave me a little bit of a heart attack at the beginning of the interview/show. I'm not going to say exactly why, but I just want to warn everybody because I almost like...
You have been warned. Once again, this time you are getting an extra warning. Once you've been warned and came and started listening, now you're giving an extra warning.
I thought we were like going to shut the show down by the way she was describing Women Your Mother Warned You About. Anyway, now you really can't wait to listen to the show. And my phone's ringing. I know Doug's gonna scream, but hey, that's the charm. That's the charm of us. That is the charm.
Part of the charm.
Of us. So at this point, he was able to go in and edit. And now we can start with, let's go back to, I know, we'll go back a little bit. We'll go back to, when did the phone start ringing? Over...
We're about to talk about this person on the show.
Oh, so anyway, Alice Hyman. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about her?
Well, according to Forbes.com, Alice Hyman is among the world's leading experts on the complex sale. And we get to figure out what the heck a complex sale is in this show. She's the founder of Alice Hyman, LLC, a leading sales consultancy for mid-sized companies whose clients see double and triple digit increases in sales by following her process. Originally from the widely known Miller Hyman Group, she helped to grow the company and prepare for a successful exit. Hyman is also co-founder of Trade Show Makeover, which the name pretty much tells you how cool that is. And she's the leader in preparing sales to get more closed deals from their investment. Sometimes it's a big one, as you might know, in exhibiting at and sponsoring trade shows and events. They're disrupting the industry by changing the focus from events as a major expense to a focus on increasing revenue by generating qualified leads that turn into deals. And that is huge because I know from experience that trade shows can really cost a lot. And then sometimes you walk away and you're like, damn, is that really worth it? Like, you know?
Yeah. And it's exhausting half the time. And one of the questions I asked her was about how to engage people, because you go to those trade shows and people are just standing there talking to themselves, looking at their phones and not engaging. And you're like, why are you here? So we talk about that.
So if you've had a fail at a trade show before, or you also have a fear of having success with the huge investment and time and energy involved in attending a trade show, then this episode with Alice Heineman is for you.
Oh yeah. And we talked about booth babes. we might call the show Booth Babes this episode. I don't know. Anyway, let's get going with this episode with Alice Heineman. Alice, welcome to the Women Your Mother Warned You About podcast.
Oh, those women. I'm telling you, gotta watch out for them. Never know where you're going to find them either. It's kind of scary.
We think you're one of them.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Okay, good. Good. How would you, this is a question we never ask. I just came up with this question. How would you define a woman your mother warned you about?
I think those are the women that have, they're mean girls and they're catty and they don't have enough confidence to be able to be their authentic selves. And so they do things to undermine you. They're not really your friend, but they sometimes want to make you think they are. So those women who will, you know, they don't have your back. They'll stab you in the back. Those are the women. Those are the women my mother warned me about. The women.
Well, I guess the show's over. Well, when we started this podcast, we were thinking that we were the opposite of the women like that. But I totally get you. Those are the women that you should be warned about. But the women that are open enough and confident enough to talk about those mean girls and
yeah.
to confront that part of society and that those cliques of women that are not inclusive to everybody.
I agree. And I think really the women, you know, your mother warned you about, when you think about the bright side of it, is that woman, she's going places, you know?
Oh, watch thank her. God. I was getting so scared for a second.
I wish everybody could see Alice. She turned into kind of like we were like witches around the fire, and her body language was like, these women, that they're mean, and those
mean girls.
Yeah, so stay away from those women and hang out with us. Because we've got your back. We've got your back. And I mean it. We have got your back. You call any one of us, we've got your back.
And how can we have more women like that who do have your back? You know, especially in sales in particular, but how can we be better women having each other's backs? Because there's a reality that there's some women out there that are the women that you initially described as how some people might see a woman your mother warned you about. But there are some women who don't have your back.
Yeah, they're clawing their way up. Yes. So I think that what we can do, one, is role model. We have to model that, be your authentic self. And it's funny, this morning I was on a video call with some clients, and one of them who knows me pretty well and the other ones have just met me, and I don't know, I did something and he goes, that's what I love about you, Alice, you are just yourself. And I was like, thank you, that's the highest compliment you could give me. So I think that number one, we have to role model. If we want women to be that way, we have to be that way. Not just women, everyone. We want everyone to have the confidence to be who they are. And I think that takes a lot of shapes, right? But in sales specifically, we as women need to really have each other's backs, because most of us who are in sales work in a male-dominated environment. Right. And, you know, the good old boys club does still exist. Although I think that it's, you know, really opening more, and there are so many men that really support women in sales and in the workplace, and that's wonderful. But we have to be aware of it. And we have to form our own club, shall we say. Like my friend Lauren Bailey, she literally started hashtag Girls Club. So look for that online, hashtag Girls Club. And the women in sales that belong to Girls Club, we've got each other's backs. We're mentoring each other. We're there to answer questions. You can get a hold of us anytime and we'll make the time, whether we're, you know, in the same company or in any company. If you need the kind of help that we can provide, we're there to do it. So everybody's busy, but hey, it only takes 15 minutes sometimes to solve a problem that someone has, or give them some advice or the words that they need to handle a specific situation. So I think, you know, one, role model; two, find other women like yourself and say, hey, let's make sure we have each other's backs. What would that look like? How would we do that? And then include any men who are also awesome at having your back, and just talk about, what does that look like? What does that mean? How would we do that? Is it formal? Is it informal? Will we mentor? Will we have a Slack group? Will we, you know, what will we do? So I think those are two really primary ways you can be those women your mother warned you about, the good ones.
The good ones. And I noticed on LinkedIn, because I was stalking you a little bit before we got
Hi,
on.
That's yeah. who you are. I see.
wanted to like fully prepare, see what you've been up to. And I saw the hashtag Girls Club and that you were in. I was like, what is this Girls Club? And I started digging. I'm like, where is this conference? When did that happen? And this was a conference in Utah.
Yes.
Correct. Can you tell us a little more about that? Because I was really intrigued by what was going on with that.
Yes. Yeah, so we were in Park City, Utah, for 2 days of the Rise Up Conference. And so what it is about a year ago, Lauren Bailey started the Girls Club, and she just asked a bunch of us. So we're in a group called Women Sales Pros. So women who own their own company and whose primary role is to help other companies increase sales, and we're all in the business to business sales realm. And so we got together for a lot of different reasons. One of them was just because there aren't enough women in sales and we want to promote more women going into sales, and because there weren't enough women on the main stage when there were sales events, and we wanted to make sure there was a place where people could go, a website, womensalespros.com, where they could see that there's all these saleswomen experts that could be on the main stage as well. And so Lauren's part of that, and she reached out to all of us and some other people she knew and said, look, I just have this crazy idea. I woke up one morning and I just really want to start this Girls Club, and I want to have mentoring and communication and all of these lovely things. And we said, great, what do you want us to do? So some of us are thought leaders in the Girls Club, some of them are mentors, some are mentees. So it's everything. And at the end of the first year of Girls Club, she wanted to have some sort of culminating event. And so we all got together and helped her put on Rise Up. There was about 100 women there. It was in beautiful Park City. And we had 2 days of not training on sales and more rigor and stuff like that, but how can we be better coaches? How can we be better mentors? How can we help each other? And women sharing their stories, and some men too. Like, this is how I got where I am. This is what happened one time to me. And then this is how I handled it. And oh my gosh, you won't believe what happened to me. And it was devastating. And I thought I was never going to be able to do anything. And then here I am today to tell you the story. So it was very uplifting. People were sharing their authentic selves and their stories. And my friend Sean Carroll Sandy even did a handstand on my bidding.
I saw that.
Right? I'm like, Sean, you've got to do a handstand.
Oh my God, that was crazy. That was literally in heels.
In heels.
Nice.
In
heels. I want to see it. I know Sean.
Yeah.
See her.
That's right. She's so full of badassery, that girl.
Yep. She really is.
A woman your mother warned you about.
Yes, she is.
That's She's awesome. Fantastic. Immediately, I used to have a fitness business, and I kind of got out of that, and she was one of my testees when she was trying to get herself, like starting to get herself back into shape, and then later she just flew and has become so, you know, her wellness is skyrocketed, but she was really helpful to me. And so shout out to Sean for kicking ass.
That's right. And so what you didn't see is that she got me to do a handstand. We didn't have photos of that. I couldn't quite do it. She's very good at it. She's very strong. I needed a little help on the way up, but I got down by myself, which was awesome. So I'm going to practice so that next time Sean and I are together, we are going to do a double handstand. Nice.
Well, she's very athletic, so she would be a good coach for you.
She is very athletic.
Love her. So according to Forbes.com, you are among the world's leading experts on the complex sale. So inquiring minds want to know, what is the complex sale and what does that mean? Because in my opinion, in real estate, all sales are complex, but I'm imagining there's a specific meaning.
There is. And you're right. By the way, I sleep with a realtor, just saying. So I do know a little bit about that world. I think that complexity, of course, is whatever it is for you. But when we say a business-to-business complex sale, what we are talking about is one company who sells to another company, and there are many moving parts. So on the seller side, there's several people have to get involved. On the buyer side, there are committees and buying influences over here and there and many departments. And so to navigate just the people alone, you basically have to draw a map of who all these people are. And then on top of that, there are lots of things that make a long sales cycle. So from the time you say to me, yes, Alice, I am interested in your software, medical device, whatever it is, by the time you say that to me and you start to introduce me to the other people who are going to be involved in buying, it could be 6 months to a year before that deal actually closes. And all that time, you are taking steps together to move towards closing the deal. And those steps could be things like integrations that have to happen on accommodations that might need to be made, contracts that have to be changed, just legal things, you know, compliance issues. So, you know, it'd be like a $30 million med device company with 10 salespeople selling to a huge hospital group where there's going to be at least 12 people trying to come to consensus to decide to buy these medical devices from this particular company when they have three or four other competitors they're also talking to at the same time. So when I say complex sale, a business-to-business complex sale, that's what I'm talking about.
That is complex.
Yeah. Sounds like a great fun time.
It's fun. If you like strategy and you like puzzles and you like stalking people on the internet and stalking companies and trying to figure it all out, then you would love it.
Yeah, because with all those people involved, like in what I do in real estate, there's only a few people you have to sort of figure out how that person likes to be communicated with and what makes them tick. But then when you've got 12 people on one side and, you know, another 12 on the other or more. Right. You got to figure out each one of those people and who's really the decision maker and who's, you know, calling the shots and whatever. It's
tricky. It's daunting sometimes because at the buying organization, sometimes they don't even know the route to get it done. And they're figuring it out as you go, because especially like, for example, with these huge hospital groups that are out there now, and I do have several clients in the field of selling to big hospitals, right? They're new to it. They used to be a small little group or just two hospitals or one hospital, and now they belong to a 50 hospital group. Yeah. And they're like, you know, we are not sure how to buy this software. We're going to have to go talk to our CFO, who's going to have to talk to the CFO of the whole group. And we're, you know, so they're navigating it as well as you are. And there's so many complexities that again, the deals can stall or they take a really long time or it's just hard. And the buyers actually get fatigued in this process.
Yeah.
Because they're like, hey, we just wanted to buy some software 6 months later. So we still don't have it, you know? So it's interesting, but you know, with real estate, like you said, you have maybe two people or, you know, a family of people, and you have to figure out how each one of them tick. What's going to make them win, feel good? How do they want to be communicated with? Imagine having to do that for 12. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's super fun, but it is complex.
If there was one piece of advice that you could give someone in dealing with the complex sale of something like that, what would be one nugget? Best practice.
Yeah, I'll just go back to, you know, what I was talking about before is being authentic. Just be yourself and build relationships with people. That's all people want. They want you to know them, right? They want you to like them. Now, some people are guarded and maybe they won't let you in at first. And I understand that, especially people in purchasing and stuff, because it's their job to get the best deal out of you and they don't want to be friends for sure. but if you are real and honest and say, look, I'm here to help you get what you need. You told me you need these results. I can provide the results and I'm going to help you get them. Here's how this is going to work. And just be very straightforward and explain to people what needs to happen next versus making them guess, right? And because you've probably worked with other organizations that have these complex buying, decision-making type of, you know, places, you know how some other companies have done it and you could even guide them. Well, in another case where we had this type of situation, these people also needed to be involved. So let's find them and get them on the team and get going. So I like to be, you know, of course, be confident, be real, be helpful, explain how things are going to work, say it with words and then put it in writing and just make it easy for the people who are trying to buy. Make it easier for them.
Yeah. And I think you really hit it on the head too, of helping the buyer, especially in a complex sale. Even in some of the work that we do, trying to help the buyer who's the first one interested in buying what they want to buy and talking them through that decision maker conversation, right? Like, so are you ultimately the one who's going to, does someone else need to sign off on this, right? And having that conversation. And then helping them through that process, because to your point, sometimes they don't even know how they're going to navigate through the process. And if you can help them and be their friend through it and kind of open their eyes. I just had a sales conversation with someone today. He's like, we're totally in on this. And I'm like, well, we still need to get your boss in on this conversation, because I know that's going to be the person who is going to be the final yay or nay person.
And we have to do it without like making them feel like they're less than, or you're going over their head, or you don't think they're important. It's like, hey, how can I help you get what you want?
Yeah.
Typically, we know there's going to have to be some sign off from the CEO or from the CFO. So what's the best way to get them involved and help you get what you want?
Yeah. I'm in this situation, I'm dealing with academia and I'm dealing with the government being involved. So
slows it down to a slow pace.
Let's make that more complex. Those pieces.
I just got involved in a real estate project that's involved with the government and HUD and everything. And after the first board meeting, I was like, no wonder things are darn slow, because there's such a paper trail. Like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Talk about a complex sale.
Let's talk about trade show makeover.
Oh, yes. My favorite subject these days.
Yeah, I want to talk about that because the name itself is like cool sounding, like makeover the trade show. If anyone has had to work at a trade show, they know how painful it can feel sometimes to work a trade show. And it's also painful to sometimes watch the people working the trade show. And you want to like shake them and go, please be more engaging at your table. So tell us a little bit about Trade Show Makeover and give us an overview.
Well, it's so funny because the way it started, it was just really like a spur of the moment thing. But I will tell you this, I've always wanted to have some sort of a sales makeover show. It's like been a dream of mine, you know, but I'm thinking like, how could you do that with like, without totally embarrassing people or anything? But there's a couple shows that I used to watch on, I think it was on HGTV. I think the guy's name was Peter Perfect. And he would like go into these stores, like little mom and pop, you know, either a restaurant or a boutique or something, and like totally trashed the place, get everything out, redo it, you know, and it was a makeover. He did some salons and some things like that. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is just fabulous. I said, I would be really good at that, you know, just go in and take over and make over. So I've always had this little dream inside me to do that. And I haven't just quite figured out how to do it. But then this summer, a couple of friends came to me and said, you know, we've just been noticing all these trade shows we go to. This is what's happening. I'm like, yeah, I've been noticing it too. And it's interesting because it hasn't changed that much. I think it's always been that way. It's just harder now to get people's attention and to get good results at a trade show. So now people are like, wow, we spend all this time, money, and effort on trade shows, and we are just not getting the return that we need. And so it just kind of bubbled up to the surface. Now, for the last 20 plus years that I've been helping these companies who have a complex sale, these smaller companies sell to bigger companies, one of the main ways that they've met these big companies is through trade shows, right? They generate leads through trade shows, which is awesome. But they've always struggled with it a little bit. So even though it wasn't my main thing, it's part of, you know, doing a complex sales. How are you going to generate leads? Well, this is one of the ways. And so I was helping them. And years ago, I wrote an ebook about how to work a trade show. What do you do before, during, and after? And it wasn't from a marketing perspective. It was from the sales perspective, with some of the marketing pieces tied in. Mm-hmm. So I really always have focused on the sales side of things. And so this was focused on that. So my friends knew that I had written this ebook. I had done a couple of webinars on the topic and, you know, had helped companies, been helping companies do this for years. And they said, we really want to start a company that focuses solely on this. And I was like, wow, I just never really thought about it. And so the next thing you know, we started a company. You know, mainly because I have nothing to do between 9 and midnight, I thought it would be a good idea to have two companies that I had to run. And so I
can't relate, you know, at all to that.
No, oh my gosh. So yeah, so like Trade Show Makeover was born. We were, you know, talking about it in the summer, ideating. If we started out with Trade Show Sherpa or something like that, and then I was like, no, Trade Show Makeover. And then we got our logo design and we loved it. And we were like, this is it. And then, you know, we had the curriculum. It just had to be kind of organized to be more specific because we're going to teach other people to sell and deliver this content because that's our scaling model. So we had a lot of fun over the summer getting everything ready. And then in October we launched. And then in November we did a 3-day virtual summit. We came out big. We had 500 people register for that summit.
Wow.
Like that.
Wow.
And so obviously it's of interest. We had 30 trade show experts on this 3-day virtual summit. And it was just marvelous. And so since then, of course, we've just had a lot of people asking us to help them. And not only do we help the companies who exhibit at the trade shows, but we help the organizers of these trade shows, some of them like conferences and smaller trade shows and associations where they have a conference going on, but they also have an exhibit hall with maybe 50 to 100 exhibitors.
Right.
And their problem is they can't retain those exhibitors because the exhibitors come, they don't know what to do, they set up a booth, they pay a lot of money, and they don't get any leads. So guess what? They don't come back.
Right.
So we can help from that angle too by, it's the same thing. We're training the sales team and the marketing team what to do before, during, and after the show. So we have a proprietary process. Create the winning strategy and plan. Dominate at the show by being memorable and making people want to talk to you again after the show. And then generate revenue by turning those leads into deals. And so we're teaching that in several different ways. And it's just really exciting. And so I, as you can imagine, since we started, I've been to more trade shows than I have ever been to in my entire life.
Mm-hmm. So really quick, for anybody that is going, oh God, I need that. What do you think is like the top one or two biggest mistakes that people make at trade shows and your advice on improving upon that? Because I'm sure there's just a ton, you know, just the beginning, the preparation and the follow-up that people fall short on. But like when they're there, what is their main things that you're seeing that people are falling short on?
Yeah, well, first I'm going to say is the main problem is that they do not prepare. they think they prepared because they paid for the booth and they got travel arrangements made and they got some gizmos and gadgets to give out, right? So they have a booth. They think they've prepared, right? But they have not prepared properly, and so everything else falls apart from there. Because they just show up at the show, and there they are.
And they think they're just amazingly fascinating, just who they are.
And you know, there's 100 other exhibitors who think they're amazingly fascinating too. So you do not stand out at all. So I'd say number one, you do nothing to stand out and rise yourself above the rest. So that's problem number one. Number two, you do not dress appropriately. So how can I tell who is in the booth that belongs in the booth and who is a visitor in the booth? So I'm not saying that you have to wear logoed outfits, but it is helpful. And if you don't have really nice shirts that match and have the logo on it, then at least have a badge that is the same for everyone. It has your logo properly on it. It has their name big so that people can see it, because you're wearing a lanyard that's hanging at your belly button. Hello, no one can see your name. It's on your belly button. So a badge, you know, a magnetic badge that's good size and it's on your shoulder where people can see it, or a really nice, you know, dress shirt that has your logo on it, so people can walk into the booth and quickly identify who works there.
Yeah,
who's in this booth, right?
So to really be on brand.
Right, be on brand, exactly. So I can't even tell. I walk in, I'm like, oh, I'm in this booth, and I have no idea who works here. So that's a problem. Now, not to mention the people who are standing in your booth on their mobile device. Now, what are they doing? I have no idea, but they're not looking at me, and I'm trying to find out what you do. So if somebody walks into the booth, you've got to be ready to look up and greet them and start a conversation. So get off your mobile device. Maybe you're tweeting something about the show. That's great. Step out of the booth and do that. Don't do it in the booth. Okay? When you're in the booth, your only job is to look up, smile, engage with people, and start a conversation. Period. So that's a big fail point. I walk by and I'm like, what are you people doing? Or they're standing in a circle talking to each other. So, you know, it's like, oh, I can tell you all work here because you all have purple shirts with green logos on them, but I can't talk to you because your backs are to me and you're in a circle talking to each other.
It's like going to a chamber networking event.
Yes, exactly.
So, I have a feeling that this phrase, if you're familiar with it, might get a reaction out of you. What about hiring booth babes?
Oh, booth babes. Yeah. So I was at World of Concrete earlier in the year.
World of Concrete. That's exciting. World of Concrete Mania.
One of the largest trade shows in the world.
Wow.
In Vegas. Humongous.
Of course, Vegas.
Booth babes. Yeah, they abound at World of Concrete. And I'm guessing there are some other places where booth babes abound as well.
Yeah, well, and I had an experience with a company last year that we went to some trade shows, and I didn't have any training, but I did at least know enough to stand there and smile. And my goal was to do what I was supposed to be there for, but just make connections. And I made some amazing connections just by talking to people, like tell them what we do, and then of course, ask what they do, most importantly, to find out what they really need, you know. And we hired booth babes for another event because we were trying to save money. And it ended up being a fail, like, because it wasn't really people who represented the company.
Right.
It's just like a hired gun who's repeating probably, you know, a script, and it doesn't really have skin in the game.
We do not have enough time to talk about all of the epic fails with booth babes that I have seen. However, I will tell you this. You can get highly qualified booth staff to help you. So, for example, one of my clients that was at World of Concrete, and they sell machinery that crushes things, and it's really cool. They had a woman that they've been using for years, and she's an announcer. And she had an excellent voice, and she had the microphone, and she would explain what was going on and talk about the, you know, the ST-29 and how it crushes, you know, and she was phenomenal. phenomenal. And that made people come towards the booth because they saw the crushing and they heard her talking. And then all of the nicely dressed salespeople who you could tell worked in the booth because they had a shirt with the logo on it, they were there and people would talk to them. It was just fantastic, right? So there are ways to get booth staff to help you when you need it. But my suggestion is look around your own company. You have customer success people who would love to go to a conference with you. You have maybe even people in accounting, some of your people who build your software or just work in any department. Why would you go hire people who don't know anything about your company? Yes, your salespeople should go. Your marketing people should go. Your senior executives should go. I mean, this is another big faux pas about trade shows. Don't send, you know, your brand new or lowest level salespeople, we call them SDRs or BDRs, sales development reps, business development reps. I mean, yes, a few of them can go too, but they can't be the only ones at your booth because they just haven't been there long enough. They don't have the knowledge or the business acumen. They don't know how to have a conversation with a senior person who might walk into the booth. You need, you know, your marketing director, your sales VP, your CEO in some cases, customer success people, you know, just a variety of great people from your company who can staff the booth with you. And then, of course, you have to train them. You don't just let them show up. All this preparation that you haven't done but need to is, what are we going to wear? What are we going to say? What are we going to do? What is this all going to look like? Who's going to work when? What are you going to do when you're not working? All of this pre-planning that people just don't do. They just show up and they're at the booth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's obvious, right? I've been to plenty of trade shows where it's obvious, and I've always wondered, why are they here? And they do work for the company.
Why are you here?
They're not engaging people walking by. Do you have some tips that you can give on that of just simple 101 engagement?
Yes, indeed, I do. So number one, you have to set up the booth so that it's inviting. So big mistake that people make, if it's pipe and drape, which means there's literally metal piping and there's drapes hanging from the back, and then on the side, it's a half wall with drapes hanging down from it, right? If it's pipe and drape, they give you a 6-foot table and pipe and drape. Okay, that's fantastic. Lovely. Now you take that 6-foot table and you blockade your booth with it. So you push it to the front of the booth, and you stand behind it with your signage, right? And then there you are behind that table. Now, who is going to walk up to you? You're behind the table. The table is blocking you from anyone who could possibly want to talk to you or develop a relationship. You're like, hey, stay back. I'm not really here to talk to you. I don't really want to know. You know, it's very bad. So the number one is, if you've got pipe and drape, take that 6-foot table and either get rid of it or move it to the side or to the back.
Yeah.
And everyone stands towards the front and greets people as they walk by in the aisle, right? Because that's what we're there to do. And you've got to be able to see them and catch their eye and start a conversation. So you've got to get that table out of the way. That's number one. All right. If you have, you know, there's some other shows where the booth is provided for you and they're all identical, and then you just slide in your logos and, you know, all of your graphics and such. In those cases, those are usually built so that they're very open, because those smart people like Freeman who put those things up, they know that you want to invite people into your booth. Now, if you really have the opportunity, you can maybe get some comfy chairs, or you can get a couch or something so people can come in and rest. So make the booth inviting. Make people want to come into your area. That's just number one. And then the booth staff have to stand near the edge where the people are walking by so you can catch their eye and smile at them and greet them and ask them how the show is going and if they heard the last speaker and what's been intriguing about the show. So you want to get them involved in a conversation, not say, hey, do you guys use blah, blah, blah? I'm like, no, and I just keep walking, you know? And this happens to me all the time. Like, I was at another big show in Vegas, where it's a show about trade shows, and it was an awesome, awesome show. But in several cases, the people standing in the booth, in fact, one of them was selling outsourced booth staff. So we'll get you people to work your booth. And she called out to me from, she was standing at her booth. I was walking down the aisle. She calls out to me, "Hey, do you use outsourced booth staff?" And I was like, "No." And I took another two steps. And the girl on the other side of the booth said, "Well, have you ever thought about it?" And I was like, "No."
If they're as terrible as you, I certainly don't want yours.
Can you imagine? And I think to myself, and you're selling outsourced booth staff.
Oh, no.
You don't call out to the people in the aisle and ask them a question. Like, you don't even know who I am. I don't exhibit at shows. I help other people exhibit shows.
Right.
Oh, so if you had been smart about asking me, "Hey, how's the show going? What have you found that's intriguing? You know, what do you do?" And I would say, "Well, I help companies do better trade shows." And then you might say, "Oh my gosh, you might have an opportunity to refer us if they needed booth staff," right? But she catcalls at me out from the aisle.
That's exactly the word I was thinking. I was like, hashtag trade show catcall is what that sounds like.
Do not do it. Do not do it. Do not do it. So make the booth inviting. Train your salespeople on how to start conversations. Don't pitch. Don't catcall, don't demo, unless you know, we're chatting and I'm like, "Well, gosh, can you show me how that works?" Great. That's an invitation to do a demo. That's what you're looking for, right? So yeah, we got to change that. But people, if they're not trained to do that, they don't know. They don't know what they're supposed to do. It's not their fault. It's your fault because you didn't train them. Train them on what to do.
It goes back to what you originally said, that you have to prepare before you get there. And that's right. What's not happening with the people who are catcalling.
Well, that is, and if you hire staff, outsource staff, they may not care. And that's the most important thing is that people within the booth, it seems to me, that people within the booth, you want them to care about what is being sold and care about helping people who are walking by if you have what someone needs. And,
You know,
we hear this theme throughout almost every podcast guest that we invite on our show, which is you got to care and you got to build those relationships and it's got to be authentic.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to be good at sales, you have got to care. If you don't care, go sit at a job where you look at a computer or just work with a little team or products or something where it's not caring about people, because there's really no job where you don't get to care about people, but there are jobs where you can care less, I guess. But in sales, you have to care because you can't solve their problem if you don't care enough to learn it. You're just selling a product to them. You don't know what they need or want it, right? No good. You've got to care enough to learn about their problem so you can help them solve it. And if you can't help them solve it, be enough of a resource in your industry so you can direct them to someone who can. This is one of my most fun things about trade shows. I always stalk the other exhibitors. I always get there early when we're set. I get set up and then I walk the floor and say hello to as many as I can and see what they have and see what they're doing. So when someone comes by my booth and I say, "Well, what's intriguing about the show? What are you looking for?" And when they tell me, and it's nothing to do with me, you know, or my client, because it's usually my clients I'm helping, then I say, "You know, I met a gal over there at booth 59. Walk over there and tell her Alice sent you, and I think she's got what you're looking for."
That's
now
brilliant.
That person's going to remember me, right?
Yeah, that's brilliant.
So I just made myself memorable and helpful, and everybody wins.
I love that. And I also love walking around to the other booths before the show starts to make connections, because you don't know who can refer you as well.
Well, my gosh, sometimes the exhibitors are great referral sources, great people you can partner with, make more official type of partnerships. But sometimes they're also your ideal customer. And I just love that, because a lot of times you can't get, even if you exhibit, you can't get the list of people who attend. You can get like a list of the companies who attend. And sometimes you can get the names, you can't get the emails. You know, and I don't blame them, because my gosh, everybody would just spam everybody. So I really don't blame them, right? But the exhibitors, you can get all of the information and weed through that and sort through it and decide who is your ideal customer out of those exhibitors. And then it's easy to go to LinkedIn and figure out probably their biz dev person will be there. Probably their marketing person will be there. So now I connect with those two. I'm like, "Hey, I'm going to be at the show. Now I've got two new friends. You know, hey, how can I help you while you're at the show? I'm going to be there, blah, blah, blah." So people overlook that a lot of times. Another thing they overlook is the speakers. I always go through and connect to all the speakers. And you never know, because it's like, oh, hey, I'm going to be there. I hope to see you. I hope to meet you. Maybe I can, if they're signing books, I want to get a book signed. But they are at companies that could refer you or could do business with you as well. So just because you can't get the participant list, you know, you could always get the speaker list. And usually they even have the links to their social media for the speakers. Super easy. Why wouldn't you do that? It's so obvious.
I always connect with speakers when I'm going to conferences with other speakers. As a matter of fact, one of them texted me last night because we're going to start partnering. She wants to start referring work to me because there are certain things she doesn't do. And so now she wants to pass them on to me. And she's asking for pricing now and booking me for January. And that was me stopping to talk to her as another speaker. And the fact that we're talking to you today is because I got to know Sean, because she and I were both a speaker at a conference, and then went to New York together, and that's where I met you.
Oh, right. Oh, my gosh. See?
Sales Hacker.
Yeah. Yeah. At that conference. Oh, my gosh. Good memory.
Small world after
it's
all.
Hey, shifting gears just a little bit, because I know we want to get to this with you. Tell us about hashtag joyful workplace.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Hashtag joyful workplace. Please go to my Twitter. That's the main place that I'm doing it. I'm going to start it up on Instagram as well and on LinkedIn. So I was at the Gartner conference recently, and I can't ever remember the person's name. That's terrible. We'll have to put it in the show notes or something. She was an awesome woman speaker, and she did all this research on happiness. And what she recognizes is that it's about joyful moments. So it's like, oh, I want to be happy. Well, but I don't know how, or I'm not happy, or, well, how do you be happy? It's the small moments that you're missing. You're letting them pass you right by, all these small joyful moments in your life. So if you go from joyful moment to joyful moment, sure, there'll be some other stuff in between, but we stay focused on those joyful moments, right? And then we're happy. And so I love the idea so much that I decided to start hashtag joyful workplace. And so anytime there's something joyful in my workplace, I want to post it, and I want all of you to do the same thing. So, for example, some people bring their dogs to work, and I had one of my friends, they posted their dogs at work, joyful workplace. The two of you together today, because usually you're not in the same spot, take a picture of yourselves and post, this is joyful workplace because we were together today, you know, physically together today kind of thing. And then, like, I have flowers always in my office from a friend of mine who has a farm with her sisters, and they grow all these beautiful flowers for events. And I was like, events, shaments, bring me flowers every week. So they bring me a vase of flowers every single week for my office, and they're beautiful. So you'll see on my Twitter right now that those are posted. But there's so many fun and joyful moments at work, just eating lunch together sometimes, or taking a short walk, or you got a new book. I just got a stack of books, you know, and joyful workplace, books came from Amazon. Just whatever those Love little it. Joyful moments are, please do hashtag joyful moments. And joyful workplace, joyful moments is good too, but hashtag joyful workplace. And I monitor that, and I'll talk to you there.
That picture I posted earlier of you, we were at lunch. It's a really funny picture of her in a ramekin. An empty nice. Ramekin of dressing. It's too hard to explain, but I'm going to repost that.
With joyful workplace.
Well, and one really great point about using that phrase joyful workplace is I think a lot of people, especially entrepreneurs, we get stuck in this mentality sometimes of where we want to be. And so thus we miss out on these joyful moments that are so, so crucial, because as you mentioned, life is lived in moments. And funny that you say that, because on my Instagram this morning, that's exactly what I was talking about. I reposted something, a beautiful picture from my honeymoon. And I said something about, you know, remembering these joyful moments, and you go from moment to moment. And sometimes when you're in kind of a difficult moment, you just have to be super grateful and go back to those beautiful vases of flowers and go back to those amazing moments, because there's going to be great ones and there's going to be hard ones. And taking time to really focus on the joyful parts as much as possible and looking for it, it helps to get you through the times that are tougher. And I think sometimes we just roll along with like, this is just not good and I wish it was better and I wish we could already be over there, instead of really noticing the joyful that's right now, because that's all you really have is right now today.
Yes. Yes. And yes. And I just think with this hashtag too, if you are having a bad moment, just go search on Instagram or, you know, on Twitter, hashtag joyful workplace, and look and see what everybody's posting that day. So I think that is a way to help each other stay joyful and stay in those moments as well, and think about other things they can do to make their workplace joyful. I mean, it could be as simple as baking some cookies and bringing them into work. That's joyful workplace. I mean, totally. This is joyful.
That, right? That would make my workplace so joyful. And so
she loves cookies. She's a cookie girl.
Oh, cookies. So in fact, what I'm going to do right now here is I'm just going to take a picture of us. And this is going to be our joyful workplace. So for today, everybody smile. Good.
Yay. How fun. Alice, it's been so great having you on the show today. We know how busy you are. So thank you for carving out the time to hang out with the cool women your mother warned you about, as opposed to the other
women. The cool
women, kids. The cool girls. And how can people reach out to you, learn more about you, learn more about Trade Show Makeover, work with you? What are the best ways to connect to you?
So the first thing I want you to do is, if you're on LinkedIn, I want you to send me a message. And in the message, it has to say, I was warned about you.
I love it. That's awesome.
And if you don't put that, I'm not going to connect with you. So that's it, period. So I want you to send me a message on LinkedIn that says, I was warned about you. And then I will connect with you on LinkedIn. On Twitter, it's easy. You can just follow me. On Instagram, I'm Alice Hyman. On all social media, it's just Alice Hyman. If you want to find me on Facebook, that's fine. Twitter, LinkedIn. I have Snapchat. I never use it. I'm getting better at Instagram. So yes, find me on any of those channels. You can also go to my website, alicehyman.com. It's H-E-I-M-A-N, alicehyman.com. And then my new company that I work on between 9 and midnight is Trade Show Makeover, www.tradeshowmakeover.com. So that's how you can find me.
Awesome. Well, we'll put that information in the show notes as well, so people can see it and not just hear it. So thank you so much for hanging out with us today.
Oh my gosh, it's my pleasure. It was really fun. What a joyful workplace we had today.
We did. Well, we're going to wrap up. We want to thank Alex one more time for being on the show. And thank you to all of our Warners for listening to this episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About. To connect with me, Gina Tremarco, directly, or learn more about Pivot Ton results, you can visit GinaTremarco.com. And Rachel?
You can find me, Rachel Pitts, all over social media as Rachel on Real Estate, or go to rachelonrealestate.com, or get your free How to Buy a Home Guide at theclosingcurve.com.
And else?
And you can find all of our social media links and some free cool downloads at womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com.
And one more reminder, Warners, if you haven't rated and reviewed the show yet, please do. We know Alice did, and we love it. We posted it even. Please do so on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, for the best relationships, keep it real, raw, and relevant.
And a little irreverence doesn't hurt either.
Bye, Warners.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.